Welcome to Dragons, Gazelles, and Unicorns. I'm Rosemary Truman, the founder and CEO of the Center for Advanced Innovation, and I'm absolutely thrilled to have Susan and Robert Gold from the Feynman School with me today to provide their valuable insights.
Thank you for having us.
Hi there. Thank you.
Thrilled to have you. So why don't you give us a little bit of background about yourself and the Feynman School?
Sure. Well, I grew up in the area and went to both independent and public schools. And then I went to college and grad school, got my degree in education and was a career educator and loved teaching. And then I went and founded with Rob the Feynman School. And now I am co-founder and head of a school.
So I'm Robert Gold, and I can't believe I'm turning 50 next month under quarantine, but you know that's where we are. And I first came to the DC area from New York back in November of 2000 for a job in tax law. So I worked in tax law for a number of years, always was entrepreneurial in spirit. And when I saw an opportunity to start a school, I thought, wow, what could be a better job than that? So we've been at this nearly a dozen years now, and it's been a great ride. Feynman School is in Potomac, Maryland, just outside Washington, DC. We work with students from preschool through eighth grade, and they just amaze us every day with, it's just incredible to work with kids who are so talented in so many different areas. We focus on academically gifted students, and we also have a focus on STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. So.
Well, I have to tell you something. I can't wait to have a party also. As soon as this thing opens up, I'm going to have a big party. I was commenting on your point about being 50 and celebrating your birthday in quarantine. So what gave you the idea about starting the Feynman School?
So we come at it from a little bit of a different perspective. I had been in the public schools teaching for about a decade. And I had always, something had always just bothered me about the focus of the curriculum and that the children who were really advanced were kind of left aside, that they would, and the thought was that they would be fine, or they were expected to tutor younger students or actually children their own age. And there was so much untapped potential and untapped talent. And as much as I could, I wanted them to learn something new every day, but in a class of 27 to 30 by myself, it was very hard for them to realize their full potential every day, and they really need a specialized education. So it kind of came to a head when our daughter was born. And do you want to take it from there?
Well, sure. Well, you know, a little bit more about my background. So my mom was actually a fifth grade teacher in Baltimore County for 4 years before I was born. And then as the firstborn, she stopped doing that for a while and started delivering the curriculum to me the day I was born.
Wow.
So I'm no Richard Feynman by any means, but yeah, I was ahead in school because my mom had given me that head start. And so school was a place where I could kind of coast. I wasn't really being taught much new that she hadn't already presented to me. So it didn't really become an issue until I started taking physics and calculus and I entered engineering school. So it was kind of a wake-up call that school isn't just a place where you show up every day and you show everyone how smart you are, and you're not necessarily there to master anything new.
And teachers don't get the proper training for this specialized education. And so Rob would just be put in the back of the room and just told to go read.
Right. In grade, I was in kind of a cardboard cubicle and said, okay. And I had a typewriter and like, all right, just don't bother us. So there you go. I guess I was a class clown. So when our daughter Madeline was born back in 2006, my first thought, well, she definitely takes after Susan's side of the family. You have MD, PhDs and Harvard Law School.
Out-lawyering everybody.
So Madeline, by the time she was 18 months, she had this big vocabulary and she was at her a checkup, and our pediatrician who'd been practicing 30 years, he pulled us aside and he said, you know, you're going to have to watch out for her in school. What do you mean by that? You know, the schools must be great around here. I mean, you know, Bethesda, Potomac, DC, this should be kind of a hotbed for education. And he said, no, not necessarily for one like this. For most kids, it works out okay, but not for a little one who is such a big thinker. And from little on up, I cannot tell you, is we were simply blown away by the things that she would come up with.
And her abstract thinking also.
Yeah.
Like time can be kind of an abstract thought for age for a child, but she was able to realize that my dad had once been her age. And so she asked him questions at, 2 years old about when he had been her age.
Yeah, 23 years, she went to Krispy Kreme and she said, "Papa, when you were little, did you like donuts also?"
Right.
So, that was an eye opener. Mm-hmm. 3.5 She said to me tonight, "Daddy, where does the sky end?"
Yeah.
So I gave her Socratic.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
So I said, "Well, where does it begin?" Mm-hmm. And she said, "Well, at the ground." So I'm like, okay, now I've got to come up with a better answer.
So being involved with many of the Mommy and Me groups, I knew that there were other children out there, and being involved in education with older students, I knew that there were other children out there who had this insatiable curiosity and just didn't wait for the world to come to them. They wanted to understand how the world works. And like we talked about before, they didn't just want to know what the computer can do for them. They wanted to know what it couldn't do or what was inside the computer.
Mm-hmm.
So we just started wrapping our heads around, well, what can we do for our own daughter and for these other children? And I called the Maryland State Department of Education, and the person in charge, Dr. Jean Painter at the time, was in charge of their gifted education division. And she said, "There's nothing like it, particularly for the youngest students, 3 and 4 and 5 year olds. So if you can dot your I's and cross your T's and get your license, we'd be more than happy to recommend your school."
Right. Wonderful. Which they have. And it turned out that the MSDE had been getting calls for an accelerated program for young kids for years on end. It just took someone as nutty as us, I guess, to actually try to start one in the middle of a recession back in 2008, 2009.
Wow. Oh my gosh. In the middle of a recession. Right. My mom was a teacher too.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to send her kids that were gifted, but in the opposite direction. You know, they were like, "These kids can't read. They'll never be able to read."
Mm-hmm.
And my mom taught them how to read. And I'll have people stop me and say, "You know, they told me I couldn't read, but your mom taught me how to read."
Mm-hmm.
So she was, there's really a big need for it in every state and every
Well, to your point, there's no one best school or best situation for every student.
Right.
You know, when our educational system kind of took its modern shape and form over 100 years ago during the industrial age, the purpose was in part to move kids through the system and prepare them to be good employees and good consumers.
Mm-hmm.
But we're finding, and this is cliche, 21st century education,
right?
It just doesn't cut it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We need kids to, be beyond the point where they're just prepared to, hopefully get a good job, but rather to be the ones who are doing the hiring by
inventing their own
jobs. They're going to be the ones who are deciding what jobs are out there and, how many are available and so forth.
Right.
So how do you shape these kids to be leaders like that?
Mm-hmm. So we have sort of coined a term called I cubed. So the first I is ideation, and it's just creative problem solving, identifying the problems that you want that need to be solved. And those can be community-wide, global, and then going into implementation, and that requires collaboration with others. Nothing is done in a vacuum. Even mathematicians collaborate with each other. And so then taking that collaboration and having it make an impact. So starting very early on to make sure that children are using their gifts for good. It's not enough just to have talents and have potential, but what are you going to do to make this world a better place than you received it? Mm-hmm. And so that's really where we start. We really want them to be wonderful citizens of the world and to promote lifelong learning. So I remember when I wrote a letter to somebody who's now on our advisory board to try to entice him, I wrote about our preschool zoologists and our pre-kindergarten physiologists and our third grade biologists. And he was so impressed that we were already considering these children to be scientists, and that we've done that from day one. We've always shown that we have high expectations for them and that we believe that they're very capable and that what they have to say, even at 3 years old, is very, very valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really sets the groundwork for them feeling confident and capable and being able to assert themselves in appropriate ways.
So the kids, and there's a deliberate mix between individual work and teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're really focusing on skills like collaboration, resilience, ways of actually, and creativity can actually be taught. Some people think that you either have it or you don't, but there are methods of teaching creativity. Yes. And we're very fortunate to work with some of the top experts in the field of education. So Dr. Rena Subotnick, who had run the research programs for the Hunter Magnet programs in New York for a while before coming to DC to take a role with the American Psychological Association. Mm-hmm. She was one of our early advisory board members. Dr. Mark Saul, who's a former coach of the US Math Olympiad team, and a former CEO of Lockheed Martin, Norm Augustine, who's just a wonderful advisor. Mm-hmm. One thing that Norm likes to say is the problem with geeks is that we don't have enough of them. I mean, not every kid, it's funny, but you know, not every kid wants to be a Bill Gates or the next Jonas Salk.
Or Katherine Johnson.
Right, or the developer of the polio vaccine. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of kids want to be famous athletes. I don't know, they want to be LeBron James or they want to be Britney Spears. But you know, at Feynman School, it's actually really cool to want to be the next Bill Gates or the next Katherine Johnson and do mathematics at NASA. She was actually popularized in the movie Hidden Figures. So we need these people to be held up as heroes, just the way that star athletes are held up and we see them on billboards in Times Square, right? We need them to have heroes in the sciences, in mathematics and technology so that they have someone that can, you know, they can look to and aspire to. And we actually try to bring mentors in to work with our kids from early on up. So for instance, a chemist who is working now with the DOD on converting seawater into jet fuel. So we, you know, we really whet their appetite, to, you know, to go a long way in STEM.
Yeah, there's a couple of thoughts that I have for you. One is when I was at IBM, I launched and led IBM's innovation strategy practice globally. And one of our foundational offerings was ideation through incubation. It's a methodology to, and it's and through realization. So it's a methodology to start something that's a breakthrough, that's that where you're looking through 8 different lenses and you're identifying new elements for all these 8 different lenses. And then you integrate them together because that's what actually creates a breakthrough.
Yes.
Well, sure. Yeah. We have a dad at our school who's currently working on longevity from the perspective of a physicist. And so what we're seeing in universities are that the departmental silos are finally starting to come down. Instead of having these little fiefdoms, you have, for instance, musicians who are working with neurologists at McGill University, which is Susan's alma mater. And you know, we have to do this. We have to do this in order for the capacity of the department to really be unleashed. You know, we have, I know in your work, you're taking sometimes inventive ideas that have been, you know, kind of on
sitting around
on the screen for some time. Yeah. And it's neat to get young kids thinking about how they might transform their ideas into reality, because everybody has a good idea from time to time. But the question is, you know, how
you
to execute.
Well, sure.
But yeah, and really how to bring it to fruition. And so it's nurturing that creativity, but it's also bringing in experts to talk with the kids and work with the teachers so that the kids can actually understand the development process. So we're a little incubator in a way.
Well, actually, I'm really thrilled to have your kids participate in our Children's Health Challenge. I would love to have them on our teams. I mean, I think they stimulate the current teams that will be in the challenge and will bring new ideas to the challenge. So yes. I'm really thrilled about that. I can see that it'll be a completely different model and will influence provide a lot of valuable influence to the team. So I'm very excited about that.
I agree, because they're not shy about asking questions. So
that's good.
Yes, they will. And they're so creative. We find that as children get older and they have more and more standardized tests put upon them and more stress of hours and upon hours of homework, the creativity kind of gets weeded out of them. But that's been the mission of our school, is to maintain that creative fire.
Yeah, and they'll remember it. I mean, they will take the lessons that they learn and they will carry that into their career. I don't have any doubt.
You know, you were mentioning about being a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old and asking these crazy questions. Well, my father used to teach me how to blow things up. And so I remember everything about him. He died when I was 4, but, you know, I remember everything about him. But, he, you know, it's really interesting how you can have those memories about the donuts and mine was Tasty Freeze.
There you go.
So I have a question on how do you help identify the gifts within each of these kids? Mm-hmm. I mean, what their superpower is, so to speak, mm-hmm. because you must be cultivating, you know, the unique talents that they all have.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it goes a lot deeper than just IQ.
Yeah, for sure.
So when we're identifying mm-hmm. kids as candidates for admission to Feynman School, we look at a bunch of factors. It's much more than just a score and an IQ mm-hmm. test. Now, that's not to say that an IQ test can't tell you anything. There are skeptics and cynics who will say, oh, those tests don't mean anything. Well, it's very possible to see a false negative. So let's say, for instance, a six-year-old goes in to take the WISC, which is a commonly given IQ mm-hmm. test for a six-year-old, and they don't like the tester, or they didn't like their breakfast that morning, or they're ornery for whatever reason. You might get a score that's artificially low, but on the other hand, you're probably not going to see a false positive. If a child does test at, say, a 145 IQ, which is considered highly gifted, mm-hmm. there's probably something there. You know, that child can benefit from something in the classroom that goes beyond the typical classroom.
Right, and so then we'll take a look at those results, and we'll look at the subtests, and it'll tell us where their strengths lie thus far, because we do develop them. And then it'll either be sort of analytical, or it'll be visual spatial. And we'll then use that along with a very intense parent questionnaire that really focuses on their history with their child.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's very lengthy. We tell the parents, you really are gonna have a good time filling it out. And they have. They've really enjoyed reflecting on their children. And it really gives us a holistic view of who their child is.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, some parents have turned in a book, you know.
Right.
I think the shortest we've ever seen is maybe a 2 or 3 pager, but it's focused on the child mm-hmm. and their ability as well as their interests, mm-hmm. you know, because the interest is just as important, if not more important than the IQ.
And so we're not the only ones to read that. So the teachers who mm-hmm. Whose classes they'll be coming mm-hmm. into read it too, so that they know what makes these children tick.
Right.
And they can kind of integrate those interests and those passions into our curriculum.
Right.
Oh, fascinating.
All the teachers receive extensive training mm-hmm. from the National Association for Gifted Children, the Maryland Educators of Gifted mm-hmm. Students Group. We also have speakers come in. Dr. Felice Kaufman actually gave a wonderful mm-hmm. presentation recently on encouraging creativity mm-hmm. in kids. And so once the children enter Feynman School, it's not as if they're walking around and some of them have a sign on them that says, I'm a prodigy. Right. And others say, well, I'm just a little bit ahead, but I don't know if I'm a prodigy. At that point, we really take advantage of reasonable class sizes. Mm-hmm. We actually cap our class size at 16, and that's with 2 full-time teachers in the room. So if you have 2 mm-hmm. expertly trained teachers, who, by the way, were typically gifted students themselves, hiring teachers out of Columbia and Johns Hopkins and Vassar and a whole cadre of top schools, because they were that child and they mm-hmm. remember what it was like, and they want to work with that child.
Or they were the child like you who didn't get the services that they needed, and they want to make it different for students going forward.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of rigorous work. We do a lot of project-based mm-hmm. learning. There's joy in the learning. Mm. And sometimes it's through the project-based learning that we uncover the students' passions. Mm-hmm. At some educational settings, you might have, I'm making this up, but let's say, for instance, there's a boy and he's really, really advanced in math. The last thing that you want to do is say, wow, you're great at math. You got that. So let's spend all of our time on your handwriting. Because what's that going to do to the child's interest? But that's just, in fact, what happens sometimes in the interest of well-roundedness. Mm. I mean, kids have to have their basic skills, and we don't want them to have gaps mm-hmm. in their academic development. But if they have a passion in a particular domain, mm-hmm. there is absolutely no ceiling. And we do everything that we can to encourage that, whether mm-hmm. it's writing a book about Alzheimer's.
Or publishing poetry. We have a budding poet in our school who has published the most beautiful poetry.
Yeah. Wow, I want to see that.
Yeah. We've had a team of 3rd through 5th graders design and build a working hovercraft. So
I love it.
It's incredible what they can accomplish, and the age, and it's almost like you know, you come to the amusement park and say, well, you have to be this tall to ride the roller coaster.
We never hold them back. I think that's what makes us really unique is that we don't ever hold them back. There's no ceiling on their learning. And our teachers really appreciate that, that they don't, they can go beyond, you know, the grade level and seek out materials at higher grade levels. And they are trusted that they know that their students can handle advanced work. And it's just a lot of fun. I remember we have an invention convention that we're currently in, which is a little odd doing it at home. But, you know, one year I remember a teacher saying, Mrs. Gold, I've got to run out to the pet store to get some cytoplankton for their invention. And I was like, okay, you know, I can't wait to see what this is all about. But the teachers have that freedom to get the supplies that the kids need and really run with the children's passion, which I'm so thankful for. They're really wonderful.
You know, my mom used to bring him, we used to save all our bugs.
Yes.
Our dead bugs. And she taught the kids how to dissect the bugs. So she bought all her own stuff too. So to do different experiential learning, opportunities. In fact, you know, I love to see our teams and our challenges grow. I mean, they grow so much because they're working with an invention that exists, but they're applying, you know, they're learning brand new skills, they're applying their skills, and they're in multidisciplinary teams. So their growth trajectory is so high compared with like a normal educational experience because they're applying what they're learning every single week.
That's every single day. They're building prototypes as they go along in different, right?
The invention already exists, but they're let's say a drone from NASA or electric car from NASA. Mm-hmm. So the electric car, by the way, had probably $100 million spent on it already. It just wasn't commercialized. So it's got a lot of features. You know, like for example, it every place on the car, it was totally fail proof. If one thing failed, something else would pick up. It was electric and I mean, it was built in an extremely safe way. Mm-hmm. You could plug it into a normal plug. So it wasn't like it didn't require anything special. But they learn about this thing that exists, and then they go through our accelerator program, and they learn about, you know, it's a kind of mini MBA, but each time they're taught like financial modeling, they have to build it, and they have to build it according to the, you know, like based on lots of different assumptions. And assumptions, when you build a financial model, it's an art and a science. And what's really fascinating also is that when they are applying all this stuff, they're working in the, like I said, the multidisciplinary teams. So they're learning from each other. They're actually creating brand new friends. I'm a very big fan of experiential learning, and because that's really how you learn. I mean, that's how you really learn.
Absolutely.
Hands-on, mind-on.
Yeah, we saw early on that the kids actually had to get their hands dirty and tinker to understand. You can't just give them a worksheet.
Right. To tell them about the 3D printer that we bought came disassembled, and we said to the third and fourth graders, here you go.
I love it.
What a price of, wait a minute, this thing was $1,700. You're going to let the adults handle that, right? No. It was more important that they understand the extruder and the filament. And eventually, a couple of the students took that their knowledge of the printer, and when we entered the Toshiba ExploraVision contest, they came up with an idea independently to take soda bottles, plastic soda bottles, and recycle the material and turn it into 3D printing filament.
So it's a continuous circle.
Nice, very nice, I love it. Virtuous circle, right?
Right.
So, you know, what also fascinates me about your school is it's not, the school's not actually just for the kids, it's for the adults too.
No. It's for the- One of the parents.
The parents,
they could go back in time.
Yeah,
it's amazing. So
we invite the parents in all the time to the classrooms. Now they're there all the time, through virtual learning. But we invite them in, and it may not be to their own child's classroom. We have somebody who worked for the Jet Propulsion Lab, and he also helped, I believe he helped the authors of the Martian. And so our fifth graders were reading The Martian, and I was like, Jeff, come on in and talk to the kids. And boy, did he have a good time. And then he came back again, and he taught them how they took that picture of the black hole, and he showed a world map, and he showed that it wasn't just a camera. It was all these telescopes working together in different points across the world to come up with this one image. So we do open our school to the parents. and they have a great time.
You know, I have to tell you, probably a lot of parents, I would love to see what my mom would say about me. I would just love her to give her that list and say, here it is, write your book. I bet you the parents, I mean, that could really benefit a lot of parents.
Yes.
I mean, like that don't have kids that go to your school.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Have you ever thought about like expanding your business model to like train parents?
We actually do have community events that have been free so far, mm-hmm. where we have invited the community in to hear from experts in the field. We had Jim Delisle come in and talk about underachievement within the gifted population, mm-hmm. but underachievement is across the board for some children.
Yeah, so we actually hosted the first NAGC Parent Day mm-hmm. in the DC uh-huh. metro area. So we had speakers coming in from the University of Virginia and Johns Hopkins University, who specialized in working with these children's, not just intellectual needs, but their social emotional needs as well.
Yes.
That's what I love about your model, because I my girlfriend's kids go to your school and they're very gifted. And I love the fact that you are looking at the entire person.
Absolutely.
It's not just what have they learned. It's so
important
from
that
a brain standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, we have to inculcate good character, because these kids are going to be in charge at some point.
And this population of children tends to feel things very strongly. I know mm-hmm. that the children that you speak of were greatly affected by COVID-19. They mm-hmm. they were very sad to not be at school. And so we took our mindfulness practices and we've expanded them greatly during this time. And it's really helped them stay connected. We don't think of Zoom meetings as screen time. We think of it as connection time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And so that has really been important. I know that the preschool class have had bring your pet to school parties, whether real or make-believe, and other classes have done mindful moments with their chime where they've taken 2 minutes and just done deep breathing together. So we do look out for the whole child. It's critically important.
How can people find out more about what you're doing with your community events?
So we do list them on Facebook, and we do have them listed on our calendar on our website. And so I try to get it onto all the mom listservs in the community as well. So it's really, we try to make it as organic as possible, but opportunities like this are also wonderful.
Yeah. I try to do a decent job on Twitter, but Susan does better on Facebook. So it's probably a better resource.
But now I've heard I've upped my game with, Instagram.
Yes. I need to do that too.
We're on the website as well. We do have a lot of speaker events that we open up to the public for people.
Oh, nice. Interested.
Yeah. And it could be someone from NASA or it could be someone who talks about time management.
Actually,
balancing things with kids.
One of our eighth graders, because we have an independent project in middle school that children participate in, it's a requirement. So this year for our graduating eighth graders, they had to create their own course. So one student has developed a whole website called Serotonin Says about ending the stigma of mental health.
Wow.
And she has prepared an event on May 22nd that she has invited the broader community to, and she is going to lead the whole thing at, 13 years old.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's impressive. So you're not only teaching them skills about skills to to boost their confidence and to their mindfulness and, of course, normal skills, but you're also training them to be leaders.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So can you give us a success story? Like someone left your school. I mean, you started in 2008. Mm-hmm. So you must have some interesting ones.
There are so many. You can rattle off some things that are just, purely quantitative.
Mm-hmm.
We've done really well in math competitions. We've always placed among the highest, ranking schools. We've done really well in chess tournaments. We have had Explorevision Future Cities competition mm-hmm. winners.
Oh, this is fantastic.
We've been able to place a large number of students into elite high school magnet programs, mm-hmm. such as the Science and Technology Magnet at Montgomery Blair, mm-hmm. which is extremely selective. And we've done quite well, not just placing students there, but having them gain advanced placement mm-hmm. within the magnet program, which is saying something. But I honestly think that the biggest reward for me,
mm-hmm.
And I think Susan as well, is just seeing the kids enjoy coming to school every day.
Mm.
Because I think were it not for a program with our mission, the kids would just be flat out bored.
Yeah.
But yeah. These kids are excited to come to school every day.
Even during winter break, they've got to be at school.
They're disappointed when the weekend comes around.
It's funny.
No, they know that they are going to learn something new. Mm-hmm. There's going to be something novel every day. Yep. They are going to create. Mm-hmm. It is not going to be drudgery. It is not going to be drill and repetition. They really get each other. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, when we first were planning this out 11 years ago, we said, wait a minute, most of these kids are going to be coming from either some Montessori program or some other program, public or private, where they were the smartest kid in the class, or they were the mayor. There are going to be a lot of chiefs in one room, and maybe they'll butt heads. But the school is really not competitive. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't even give grades in elementary school.
Right.
The parents just get a narrative report.
Wow.
And they it's really worked out beautifully the way that they collaborate. I wish the teens of adults could function, in as comfortable way as kids do.
And the way that they complement each other throughout the process, and they recognize the efforts that each other bring to a project.
That's nice.
It is really nice.
Sure. And some of them might be more interested in biology, others are more computer science. They all recognize that these are bright kids, they're curious, and they're all there to learn.
Mm-hmm. A story from my side, when I launched and led IBM's innovation strategy practice, the way we started the practice was we looked at the whole horizon, the competitive landscape. Mm-hmm. And I had this amazing team. I mean, because we were basically, this team, we were all building the offerings. What are we going to offer, And part of it I knew already, because I had already, the reason I was doing it was because I ran IBM's innovation strategy practice. The internal strategy globally, and it lifted revenue by $16 billion. So we were to replicate that, but I also wanted to make sure that we were extremely competitive. Well, I would be in meetings all week, all around the country or all around the world. I'd come back and see my team, and basically Fridays were with my team, and I'd come into the room, and David would say, well, Matt helped me with this, he did such a great job. Mm-hmm. And Melissa would say, oh my gosh, David helped me with this, and that was his idea or her idea. I mean, I couldn't believe the most beautiful dream team I ever had. It was just it warmed the cockles of my heart. I mean,
it is a wonderful feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's really phenomenal. It's one of the most important skill sets as teaming and collaborating and understanding.
And that's what we've heard from all of these eminent people that are in different fields. We say, what is the most critical skill that you see that these children need to be adept at? And they say communication and collaboration, hands down.
Absolutely. Very difficult.
Mm-hmm. And that's worked its way into the educational method and madness at the university level. So one of our advisors, Dr. Eric Mazur, who is a physicist at Harvard, and he's been a dean in the department, he has pioneered a P2P learning model. So peer-to-peer, he realized that the more he talked, the less that his students learned. Mm-hmm. He said, so why not actually, instead of having the master at the front of the class, the sage on the stage, if you will, let's have discussions. Let's have kids actually talk in physics class. Let's have some graduate students come around and stimulate discussion and make the room more of a circle than, kind of a typical auditorium. Right. And he's had tremendous results with that. He has had great results with modern grading policies, where it's not just a final exam at the end, but grading not just content knowledge,
but skills
professionalism, engagement, and that sort of thing. So we're really trying to incorporate best practices, and we're nimble enough that we don't have a big bureaucracy, so that we can do these things.
Mm-hmm. So for the listeners here, some probably don't really understand the difference between a skill and learning something. How do you distinguish?
So you have a content, and that's your ABCs, multiplication, addition. Let's take biology, the parts of the cell. But then it's taking that, and it's the skill set would be applying the application and communicating. Yeah. So for instance, the children who learned the parts of the cell then had to go and apply it to how is a school like a cell.
Oh, I love it. That's like wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so on my name tag, I'm supposed to put nucleus.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, so
oh, that's wonderful.
The transfer of knowledge, the connections, mm-hmm. Looking at systems, and it's really the way to self-regulate is really critical. Communicate in writing and verbally. So those are the sort of psychosocial skills that are critically important for success.
And is that your logo in the background, the Feynman logo?
Oh, yeah, great. It is. Okay.
What advice would you give to parents out there when they have a gifted child?
Start early. Capitalize on that curiosity and really reach out to experts in the field. You know, mm-hmm. do your research. The National Association for Gifted Children has mm-hmm. wonderful resources for parents that are free. Mm-hmm. And I would just say start early.
Yeah. Be an advocate.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Be an advocate. Don't, you know, there are a lot of people who will say, well, the kind of parent that would come to a gifted program, that's going to be the pushy parent. And that's not necessarily true. I'd say 95% of the time, the reason that parents have come to us is because the children are doing the pushing.
Mm-hmm. Mm, interesting.
Skeptic might
say, I like that.
Right. How do you know that a five-year-old is gifted?
Right.
And we don't like to call them a gifted child, mm-hmm. to say,
not
gifted or ungifted.
Right.
But if there are particular talents, if mm-hmm. if a child is especially curious, if they're an early reader, if they want to do something with an abacus at a very young age,
they like to take things apart.
Sure.
Yes.
yeah. They're, so the parents should definitely advocate, and usually it's because of the right reasons. They can't keep enough books in the house. Mm-hmm. Every time they go to the library and they bring home 10 books.
Yeah.
Well, kids.
Oh my gosh, I did that to my.
Gotta get new books.
Yeah,
next day.
And yeah. One of the things that is on our horizon is to really create a teacher training center, because sometimes parents, let's say English isn't their first language, or they don't know the signs to recognize giftedness in their children necessarily, because they don't come with instruction manuals, unfortunately. But really, as part of teacher training, because in most teacher training programs for your master's degree or undergraduate, learning how to identify gifted students isn't part of that requirement. So becoming a teacher training center for teachers from all walks of life, all different socioeconomic areas, to come and kind of see what we do on a daily basis and learn from our teachers is really one of our goals.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to be a host school for NAGC back in 2014. There was a busload of educators from across the country that visited our school. And they were really impressed with mm-hmm. what the teachers were doing and the flexibility that they had in the classroom, because mm-hmm. there wasn't necessarily a prescribed number of topics that had to be gotten through in a year. You know, there's a myth about gifted education and the myth is basically that it's rushed. Mm-hmm. You know, why are we trying to push these kids ahead?
Right.
Are you trying to get kids to, you know, go off to college at 11?
No.
And that's not really what it's about at all. You know, radical acceleration, you know, is always something that ought to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. Mm-hmm. But gifted education is often not so much about speeding things up as slowing down mm-hmm. and diving deeply into a subject. Mm-hmm. You know, Richard Feynman used to rail against learning that was a mile wide and an inch deep. Sometimes kids are mm-hmm. really so interested, they want to learn everything about a topic. I remember once we were learning about volcanoes with the first graders for a day or two. They wanted to learn it all. So that turned into a week and a half, two weeks, and they could tell you about mm-hmm. stratovolcanoes and, you know, and every imaginable nuance mm-hmm. of it. So they, and allowing them to do that, you know, that's really what you have to do as you progress mm-hmm. in your studies. You don't, you know, you're not necessarily rewarded for being a jack of all trades, but rather becoming an expert. Yeah. And
lucky for us, our pediatrician had the wherewithal to kind of alert us to the mm-hmm. fact that he said he gets referrals for kids for medication every year, and all they are bored.
Aww.
I know.
Aww.
I know, broke my heart.
Well, this is a gross generalization. Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, the young boy who's bored will let you know. The girl, sometimes you may have to tease it out.
Yeah.
Not in every case,
not in every case,
you know, one way or another, you need mm-hmm. to find out if the child is chafing at their constraints, mm-hmm. that they're really looking for more. And these mm-hmm. kids are just demanding more. Mm-hmm. And they deserve more. Mm-hmm. They really do. If we're not there for them, when they need us, how are they going to be there for us
when we need them?
Yeah.
Right about now. Yeah. This is when we need our gifted students, right? Who've actualized their mm-hmm. talent. You know, society needs them right now more than ever.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. So what is the call to action for the listeners?
Well, I would say to definitely keep us on your radar. Look for community events that we're going to be offering. Reach out to us because we'd love to talk to you about your children and help guide you on the right path for them. Get you resources. We have a lot at our fingertips, and we can point you in the right direction. And really to help people realize that this is a specialized education. It's not something to be ashamed of. It's just something that these children mm-hmm. actually need. And it's something that our society needs so that we can keep the innovation going, particularly within this country, and not fall further and further behind.
Well, right. I was actually in a seminar one time, and I heard that Nelson Mandela and Idi Amin both had approximately the same IQ, and it was a high IQ. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that we keep these kids interested and on the right track. It's so easy for an academically talented student to get bored, to become disenchanted with school, mm-hmm. and, you know, and God forbid, get into trouble some way. So again, you know, I come back to what kind of leader do we want them to become? Yeah. We have that responsibility mm-hmm. only for a limited window. Right. You know, when they're young, these are the most absolutely critical years for learning and their habits towards school, their attitude towards the world. So we want them to keep that curiosity so that they're not wasting mm-hmm. their talent. And we really want them to use their gifts for the greater good.
And a lot of parents are concerned, well, if my child is in this, you know, beautiful bubble, they won't be able, they won't know how to interact with other students or other children who are not like they are. But there's a real detriment to them not being around their intellectual peers. I think it prepares them better to deal with all types of people that they're going to meet in their lives, because we're teaching those psychosocial skills that teaches them to look for strengths in other people mm-hmm. and communicate. And so they're going to get along famously with wherever they land.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love those characteristics that you're building in the kids. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. Communication and teamwork.
Yes.
Two incredibly important skills mm-hmm. for, you know, all the years that I've had building teams and having them run all around the world. So thank you for nurturing our children. Thank you so much for providing your time today and providing, again, valuable insights and for doing the crazy thing that you're building your school.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Have a good day.
Bye.